another episode of Review Improve, a podcast dedicated to personal, practical growth in the 21st century, primarily through the reviewing of different books and articles. I'm your host, Sam Rust, along with my co-host, Mr. Bradley Luce. Brad, how is it hanging in California today?
Right now it's cloudy, a little bit kind of just like hazy, but, you know, getting a lot of stuff done around the house, getting the house set up, doing some chores, putting up shelves, stuff like that. So, yeah, how are you down in Colorado?
It's sunny here. We are enjoying a productive day on the family front. I know things have changed in the Luce household recently. Why don't you fill the listeners in on some of the happenings?
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah, the recent layoffs of Tesla they dropped my whole department. So I'm now in the search for a new job. So if anyone out there knows any of any jobs within the Modesto, Tracy, Manteca, Livermore, Pleasanton area, hit me up. So that was a very interesting experience. Learned a lot. But it's kind of, I'm taking some of the stuff, you know, I learned out of this book we're going through today, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And where he says you should know a little about a lot. So I'm like, all right, how can I use this to learn? And I just realized I think I have the same exact shirt as you have on right now. I'm just going to throw that out there.
So apparently we both are fashion lords, as it were.
I don't know where mine came from, though. My wife got it, but, you know, it's identical to the one you have on. I'm going to actually button up my overcoat right here. But, yeah, so it's I'm going to just use this opportunity to learn what I can and maybe go a new direction, use it to broaden my skill set.
Yeah. Well, and those of you that have been a little bit longer time listeners might remember that you just closed on a house like 6 weeks ago, maybe? 8 weeks ago?
Yeah, about 8 weeks ago. So got a new house, have a baby due in May. So, you know, it's perfect timing. I know it's the Lord's timing, but it's like, all right, let's do what we can and grow from this experience.
I'm curious, are you at all excited for a new challenge? I know you were really getting into a groove at Tesla and enjoying the work there, but there was a pretty long commute. The hours were a little bit longer. Is there part of you that's pretty excited for the change, even if it's a little bit unknown right now?
There is. Actually, the more I think about it, the more kind of excited I'm like, all right, I did Tesla. I tried Tesla. I had fun. I learned a lot, but I'm also ready for, I don't know, maybe I'll go work for a glass bottle maker. I don't know. Learn that. Or maybe I can go into something more of the real estate side of property management. Something like that. Learn the one of those skill sets. So I am excited to, honestly, the unknown kind of. And it's a little scary, but it's also very exciting. Like, all right, what's the next step? What's the next new thing I can add to make myself more valuable to myself in the future and to other people?
Well, I'm excited to see where the future takes you. And I imagine that we'll be tracking your job progress pretty closely and maybe even do an article type episode around your job hunt. But transitioning towards our episode today, we are covering a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. This book was, as most of these are, was big in my life, was hugely influential for me about 2 years ago. Really got me started down some of my real estate investing endeavors and changed how I thought about money. We've saved it till now. Because I wanted to have a couple of episodes under our belt. There's a couple of books like that both Brad and I have on our list that we want to cover, but we didn't want to do right out of the gate because we want to be able to do them justice. So we're giving Rich Dad, Poor Dad a go. I know based on the recommendation we gave in our last podcast and kind of giving our listeners a heads up, that several folks from our listening audience have already read it or listened to it on audible.com and have really enjoyed it. I've already had, I guess, three conversations around this book from listeners. So that's been really neat. It's been fun to see people latching onto some of the concepts in this book. Overall, high-level thoughts on the book as we head into it, Brad. What did you think? This was your first exposure, correct?
Correct, yeah. I honestly really enjoyed it. I really like how it really grounded in what Dave Ramsey starts on. Dave Ramsey really starts on the being careful what you buy, how you use your money, save money, get out of debt, have like a kind of start thinking more long term than just immediate here now. And he really builds upon that, I think, at least from doing what Dave Ramsey recommends. He really builds on it like, all right, now that you have some savings, you have some money, you're out of debt, you're not indebted into any credit cards or anything like that, let's start building your asset column so then your money starts making you money. Dave Ramsey does talk a little about like mutual funds and retirement planning, but he doesn't really go into actually the how-tos of creating wealth based off of your savings. But I overall, I really enjoyed it. And I think this is, we both agree this is one book that we both agree that should be come back to every year. And I think now that we've read so many books and gone through it with this podcast, I think we're to like 7 books we've said, yeah, we need to read this every single year. Like Dave Ramsey's book, this book, Essentialism, Eat That Frog. It's just something that a lot of these are just basic things that are good to keep forefront in your mind, but especially this one. So what are your thoughts on it? I know you've read it a couple times. What are your overall sophisticated thoughts now that you've had like 4 different times to think about it and talk to people about it?
Overall, it's beautiful in its simplicity, I guess I would say. There's not highfalutin concepts. It's not a highly intellectual read. Few of the books that we've covered have been. But this one is... I enjoy the style that it's written in. It's similar to Richest Man in Babylon, but in this case, it's more of a personal story that's been, you know, maybe a little bit added to by Robert as he's written the book. But he kind of goes back to the beginning and talks about his rich dad and his poor dad. One of them is his real dad. One was a hugely influential father of a friend that shaped... kind of by their extremes at either end of the spectrum and how they perceived money, those two perspectives had a huge impact on his perspective on money. And that's really what he shares in this book. And I would totally agree with you, Brad. Builds a lot on what Dave Ramsey says. Now, I will say Dave Ramsey is not a Robert Kiyosaki fan in some ways. Robert Kiyosaki is all about using debt on assets, and Dave Ramsey has more of a completely debt-free approach. But in a lot of ways, you need to have that solid foundation of no consumer debt, of living below your means, of making some of those simple decisions and living those out well before you can transition into Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cash Flow Quadrants, and some of the other books that Robert Kiyosaki has written. So, at the beginning of the book, Kiyosaki posits that everybody is motivated by either fear or greed. And I thought that would be a good place for us to start. What did you think of that theory? Do you think that that holds true, Brad? And then I guess a follow-up question to that would be, in your opinion, is all greed bad?
And now we're getting to the deep part. let's get out with Plato here. And,
I didn't say it wasn't deep. I just said it wasn't complicated.
So here you start asking the question like, so Mother Teresa, everyone holds her to be like a saint. Well, is she motivated by either fear of something or by greed of something?
Did you just answer a question with a question? So, you did, that's you a, little the, snake.
But I have a book called Framing the Debate. And it's about how a lot of the politicians these days actually frame their debate answers and questions around what's said. It's a really interesting book. It was written like 2005. So it's a little bit older, but interesting. But that's what kind of the question that comes to my mind when you ask me that question. I'm like, so how far are we wanting to start questioning people's motives? Basic thoughts are the majority of people. Let's take out these outlier people. The Bill Gates, the Steve Jobs, the Mother Teresa, you name it. Let's take those people out of here. And the basic thoughts are, yes, most of the time it is true because we do something because we are reacting to a fear, such as like we want something we do not have and we're afraid that we will never get it, or that this is the one time that we are able to get it, or fear of what someone might say or think or do. But That statement itself is difficult because some people are motivated by something they need, such as food, as people live in third world countries. So keeping it just to the basic first world USA, majority of circumstances, yes. I don't know. Take it from there.
I think that largely it's true. I think you can come up with a couple of outliers. But I think even in third world countries, people operate probably more from a basis of fear, but that fear is a little bit more base. And what I mean by that, here it might be a fear of not having the nicest TV and sound system you want. In a third world country, it might be fear of not eating that day. But I think that most people, I'm going to say 98% of people, are motivated by fear or greed in some mixture. I personally think am motivated more by greed than by fear, which is, that's not a good thing or a bad thing in the sense that I'm more greed than fear. That's how I identified as I was reading through the book and kind of evaluating myself, which side of the spectrum do I tend towards? I'm curious if you have a tendency that you've identified in yourself, Brad.
Mine's more fear. I think the fear of not being, I know for a lot of like pushing myself, it's more like the fear of like not reaching my potential or missing out on an opportunity because I didn't know something or I wasn't prepared or something like that. I honestly am a pretty simple guy. I don't like, it comes to a shock to most people. I don't even own a TV. So like, then again, you could say, well, you're motivated rather than fear, you're motivated by greed because you want to be able to use this opportunity. You want to be able to know this thing. So I mean, you could say either way, but mostly I think it's probably the fear part.
Yeah, but it's just an interesting exercise to go through. And I think illuminating of yourself a little bit is helpful. Some of that introspection is helpful to know where am I coming from and really sit back and recognize why do I make the decisions that I make. Now, hopefully you and I are basing these decisions on foundational principles of right and wrong that go deeper than what we may perceive. But as we build upon that foundation, then, you know, in here in this episode, we're talking primarily about money and our attitudes towards money. You know, where did that trace back to? How do our decisions trace back to our emotions? So following up on that, is all greed bad? Go, Brad.
Let me dig out my Plato here and see what he said on what his writings are. No. And see, now we're going to be touching on so many different things. People are going to be like screaming at their iPod, like, what? What's the definition you are using of greed?
So that's part of the tricky part, because whenever you say greed, you think or it carries somewhat of a negative connotation. And so the definition that I came up with from Merriam-Webster was a selfish and excessive desire for more of something, such as money, than is needed. The part in that that's not good is the selfish and excessive desire. That doesn't mean that the desire is necessarily bad, though. So I spent quite a bit of time, actually, combing through synonyms for greed, looking up other words that were... And I couldn't come up with a word that I would put in greed's place.
I think so. That's the Latin heritage we have of our language. There's probably not any other word for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have a word for everything.
Everything.
Literally. But how to define that? I mean, desire, ambition, but none of those, again, pulling us back to what we're talking about. We're talking about money and how we perceive money. And you know, not to get hugely theoretical on our listening audience, but one of the reasons that I think capitalism works is the foundational principle that people in their pursuit of material possessions, i.e. money or stuff, are going to generally allocate their capital and their resources more efficiently than any form of a government-led system. That's a really broad, really general statement. But I tend to agree with that, that people are generally going to be more effective at allocating those resources as they pursue success, particularly in the financial realm. I firmly believe that you can pursue success and not be greedy, but greed...
You're kind of, in a way though, because you're required to be successful, because unless you're successful, you cannot provide for your family. You cannot take care of family members who need caring. You cannot provide clothing, food, shelter. You cannot provide the right good education, technically, if you're not successful. So we can want to be successful, but when I want to be so successful, I have $2 million in the bank just to sit there so I can talk about it and tell people I have it. That's when it becomes wrong.
Yeah. And you know, we're touching on the movie Wall Street back in the 80s. One of the more famous lines from that movie was by Gordon Gekko. He said, "Greed, for the lack of a better word, is good." And that makes me really uncomfortable.
It does, yeah.
And that's why I was trying so hard to come up with another word that carried the financial aspect that greed does without some of the negative connotations. And I couldn't come up with one word to do that. But I think you touched on something, Brad, that's really important. And that is, what is our purpose for success? If our purpose is mainly for our own enjoyment, or primarily for our own enjoyment, our own gratification, I think it's misplaced.
So here's a question. What is your motivation for financial success?
So my motivation, I've spent a lot of time talking about this and may have covered this in a past episode to a small degree, but for me, it comes down to stewardship. I believe that I was created by God, and that he's given me talents, he's given me abilities, he's given me the background that I have, the upbringing that I have, the resources that I have, the family that I have, and I am called ultimately to glorify him with all of those things. And so to me, settling for less or not seeking to maximize what he's given me is a failure on my part to be a good steward of what I've been given. Now, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm just completely altruistic and that I'm perfect and that I think that way all the time. But that's how I try to orient my mind and channel the ambition that I believe I have been given, and make sure that it doesn't cross the line into pride, arrogance, or greed ultimately. I don't know. What do you think?
So here's a question, though. But is that enough of a reason, though? Because some people could say, hey, you are a good enough steward. Like, how do you know when you're a good enough steward? You could say you're a good enough steward just by buying one apartment complex. Now you can provide for your family. You can provide for other people. You can give charities. How do you know how much is being a good steward? Like, is that enough reason behind your want of success or your passion for success?
I think it is, because I am not conforming to a standard that other people put on me. I don't want other people to say, oh, you're a good enough steward. Ultimately, that's something that only I can be convicted of before God. Obviously, people can look into my life and say, you're being a poor steward in areas. I think that's a lot easier. But it's this idea of continuous improvement. As a Christian, Paul exhorts us to run our race well. And part of running well is to run hard through the entirety of the race. And I think getting to a certain point saying, aha, I've made it, I'm going to retire early, enjoy a life of ease and comfort, and I'll give my obligatory 10% to charity, and I'm going to sit on a beach for 6 months out of the year, that's failing to be a good steward of so many things. In a way, I feel like the more I know, the more I'm responsible for, and the further I need to push myself. Now, that's not necessarily going to mean that, you know, in 10 years, I'm going to own 10,000 apartment units. God might direct me into something else. But what is before me now, I believe it is maximizing the gifts that I've been given.
So basically what we're saying through all this is that before you really strive for financial success, you really have to decide why you're doing it, the reasons behind it, and you have to be comfortable with that and make sure that you are doing it not for, you can do it for personal gain. Let me put a little asterisk up there. for the right, like you could say, I want to have this personal gain of having this many rentals. So then down the road, I can use that money from them for my kids' education, college education, something like that. But what we're trying to say is you just have to make sure that you really are grounded in what you, in doing it for the right reasons. I don't know. Am I making sense?
Yeah. And I think part of it that I would say to our listeners, because I know we have a wide variety of listeners here and not all of them embrace Christianity. But if you make money your God and you could live out all the principles in this book and still have an empty life. And I think a lot of people in the tech space in particular realize that they don't know what to fill that hole with. And so they've tried money and that didn't fill their hole, and so they're moving on to other things. And so, you know, Rich Dad, Robert Kiyosaki, talks about this towards the end of the book, you know, when he says, have a big why for doing these things. Have something that grounds you. And I think even if that why is not necessarily rooted in honoring God, it would behoove you, the listener, to have a bigger why than just, I want more stuff. If that's not a big enough why, you need something bigger, something grander, something I would encourage you to look outside of yourself, and not just in fulfilling your own material needs. Although, obviously, if you achieve financial success, especially at the level that Kiyosaki talks about in his book, there's going to be a lot of material needs and wants fulfilled.
Right. He even goes on at the one of the chapters where he has like 10 steps to start out with. His first step is figure out the why. And he's like, if you can't figure that out, don't even go further. He's like, if you can't figure out why, you're not going to be motivated or convicted to stay on this path. You're just going to end up probably causing yourself more pain and suffering, and just don't even bother with it.
So I felt like that we needed to start there because there are some foundational principles to money that are really important and that both Brad and I feel very strongly about. And so I think that that was a great place to start the discussion. We're going to make it a little bit lighter from here on out, not quite as philosophical to the deep inner parts of our core being. But in chapter two, so moving on.
Chapter three.
Or chapter three, depending on your version.
Yes.
Kiyosaki makes a pretty bold statement that runs counter to what most middle-class Americans think of, which is that your personal residence, if you own a home, is not an asset. And he goes in and explains that in a couple of different ways. But I'm curious, Brad, for your perspective, you just bought a home 8 weeks ago. You were really, really excited about it. You've been pumping it up as a, you know, you, I think you even told me you considered it an asset and an investment and all these things. I'm curious how reading this book has changed or modified your perspective on your recent home purchase.
It changed a little, but still, we bought it. A lot of people told us don't buy it in the California area because it's so expensive. It's a waste of your money and stuff. We stayed, kept our search within a certain radius, kind of. So we're right between 99 and I-5, right where 580 goes off that. So we're in a very good exit and entrance route for Silicon Valley. And so we kind of bought it with the idea of, or we didn't kind of thought, we bought it with the idea of, all right, we're going to live in it, and then we're eventually going to move out and rent it out. So that's kind of why we were saying it's more of an, it is in our minds kind of asset. In his definition, no, it would not be an asset because he says asset will make you money. Anything that does not make you money is a liability. So, I mean, ultimately, like if I was to go through what he said and make my house purchase again through based off of what he said, the smartest thing to do would have been buy some sort of real estate that would have brought an income while I could live in it, such as a duplex, triplex, something like that. And then I could have it bringing in income. So it'd be definition of an asset, bringing in some for cash or paying for my residence of living.
I think it's important too that you didn't make necessarily the wisest financial decision of all financial decisions that were open to you, but you don't make financial decisions in a vacuum either.
Right.
You know, I know we talked about you guys buying a duplex or a triplex, but you have to take into account family concerns. You have your son and another kid on the way.
Stuff like time constraints. Like I was working at Tesla with, 14 hours a day gone. So, I mean, I couldn't have been like a landlord there all the time, stuff like that. But again, I mean, he goes through like, all right, this is what an asset is. This is what a liability is. And looking at what everyone thinks today, I mean, how many people have you heard says, oh, my car is an asset?
I mean, actually have some people that I'm thinking of that I know pretty well that would say that. I'm like, no, it's got a motor. By definition, it goes down in value like a rock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think, I mean, and then again, even after reading this book, I'm happy and I'm glad I bought this house. But if I was to do everything strictly by the book of assets versus liabilities, I wouldn't have bought it.
Yeah. And you touched on it there, but just to make it clear for our listening audience, An asset, as Robert Kiyosaki defines it, is something that provides positive cash flow. And a liability necessarily is anything that doesn't do that. And so a home, a personal residence, by that definition, is not an asset because it falls into the liability category by spending money on it every month. Now, it's better in some ways than renting, depending on your personal life situation, because you are building up equity. Hopefully you buy it wise and you're in a good area like you are, Brad, and you're gaining through appreciation. But a lot of people feel like they've made it when they buy a home.
Right. And they just kind of sit back and like, all right, we own our home. We have a brand new car out in the driveway. We're paying $4,000 a month on all of our payments. Hey, we've made it.
We've made it. We have arrived. We're adults.
And, we bring in $4,100 a month and paying for $4,000. Hey, we're positive. We're good.
And that's not the goal, to survive. The goal is to thrive, for most people anyways. You know, for me, that idea of your home not being an asset really resonated. 2 years ago, my wife and I were trying to decide whether we would push to pay off our home, which we had a path where we could do it in 3 to 4 years, or we could refinance it and pull that capital out and redeploy it. And after reading this book, we refinanced our home, pulled out the money, and went and deployed it into a couple other areas that have done really, really well since then. We've also done something called house hacking, where we've had friends and now some traveling nurses live in our basement. And so we've been renting it out. Hasn't fully turned our home into an asset, but it has helped quite a bit with living costs, gaining some revenue from the part of the house that we're not using. So, you know, moving from that concept to the area of assets versus income, how do we weigh these different concepts? How did you think about assets and income before reading this book, Brad, and how do you think about them now?
In that same area, he talks about minding your own business, which Richest Man in Babylon really touched upon too and kind of focused on. But now beforehand, I really thought about like, all right, income is my day job and whatever I make through my 9 to 5 or 5 to 5 job. And then assets are whatever I can buy down the road with whatever I saved up. After reading the book, it's more like income is any money I have coming in from any investments, job, work, assets, any money, positive cash flow coming in. Pretty much. I might be getting that a little, not quite what he said, but it's that idea.
Well, that's how you took it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the right answer. The right answer isn't how he wrote it. It's what did you think? I think for me, after reading this book, it really shifted my focus from income to assets and figuring out ways to accumulate assets, which will produce income by their very definition. And how that like specifically plays out, I think, is looking at income generating opportunities beyond just your job and really trying to find ways to, as Kiyosaki would say, have your money work for you. Whether that's passive investments, like investing in other people's real estate deals or in the stock market through mutual funds, or getting out there and buying a fix and flip, or buying a duplex, triplex that you live in house hack, or if you go to the next level and do multifamily deals, really trying to accumulate assets that produce income. And so I think it changed my perspective a little bit in those areas.
What are your thoughts on his mind your own business, where he was basically like, most people work for their employer, then they work for the government, then they work for whatever liabilities they have. Kind of in that order, maybe not in that order for everyone, but he's like, but you really need to focus on your own business, making your own self money, growing your asset column, and minimizing your liability. What were your thoughts on that whole section?
It's definitely different than how we're conditioned to live, but I think that's part of a wealthy mindset. And I know that sounds a little weird, but if you want to be wealthy and have long-term generational success with money, part of it is you have to change your thinking. There's a way that brings success, just speaking in broad general terms here, and a way that will just keep you where you're at forever. And I think people who, to take a richest man in Babylon concept, who pay themselves first, and then pay attention to your personal balance and income sheet, and think strategically, both short-term, mid-term, and long-term, with assets and income in mind, you will come out so much further ahead than the average person who spends their life figuring out, how can I get to that next promotion? So many people think about life in terms of, what's the next step in my company that I can take? What's the next thing I can add onto my resume? And Rich Dad Poor Dad kind of blows that up. He says, think about yourself as a business, and how can you push it to greater profitability?
And at Tesla, when I was reading this book and I was talking to people, like what's your financial goals? How are you going to get ahead, and how are you going to pay this off? And so many people told me, I'm going to get a promotion, I'm going to make this much, I'm going to be able to put this much aside, and then go from there. And he's not, minding your own business isn't just about money either. It's about knowledge and education on how money works, how business concepts are, different investing avenues, stuff like that. It's not just about money either. It's a lot about money, but it's also, you can't focus on money but not get education about money either. You got to do both. What I think is really interesting, because these days you see a lot of now 30-year-olds acting as if they're still 20 with all the time in the world they need. And they're just going, oh, I'll work for this place just for a couple more years, then I'll focus on my situation.
Well, and he proceeds then to talk about the importance of harnessing your mind, engaging your mind in these pursuits. And we've talked about that probably in more episodes than not. But again, talking specifically about financial wellness here, and with regards to Rich Dad Poor Dad, your mind is your greatest asset to figure out different ways to grow your income, to find assets. But it requires being proactive. And I think that's super important. What about you, Brad?
I think the answer to this is why we have the podcast. what way can we help hold each other accountable for pushing ourselves, for learning more, for reading, staying on track reading? Because we're both like, oh yeah, I heard about this book. I kind of was reading this book here and there. It took me a while to get through though. But I heard a quote, like, those who lead, read. And honestly, like, if you're going to get ahead anywhere, you're going to have to get some education knowledge. And the best way to do that is through reading. So you can exercise the brain just like you exercise the body. And I love Brandon Turner's, his from Bigger Pockets podcast, his example of people who work out. They make a resolution, I'm going to lose 50 pounds, I'm going to work out every day, I'm going to go to the gym. But then they just kind of teeter out. They do it for 1 week and then do it for half a week. Then you start going here and there, spottiness. A lot of people do the same thing with education and knowledge and reading and stuff. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it really comes back to having a plan, being intentional, and then executing the plan. If you wondered how to do that or want some good resources on that, I'd go back and listen to Measure What Matters. And then maybe even our goal setting episode, where we talked about how we're trying to implement it in our personal lives. But just like anything else, if you're not intentional, you're not creating space, and you're not prioritizing something, you're not going to make it happen. In this case, if you're not prioritizing engaging your mind, if you're not making it happen on a regular basis, when I say regular, probably a daily basis, it's just not going to happen. So, go listen to those episodes if you're interested in learning more about that. One of the ways that I enjoy engaging my mind is through a variety of games, whether that's board games, card games, or social games. I think it's a great way to get to know people and engage your mind in trying to conquer the board, the world, or the couch, depending on what you're playing. Triple S Games is sponsoring our show today. And they're a great resource for those of you who also enjoy games. They put forward short, to-the-point, scripted, and visually enhanced videos that make learning new games a snap. It's helpful for beginners in grasping some of the strategy points behind the more complex games that come out, and really are presented in an articulate and concise format. I've really enjoyed this resource. As a more experienced game player, I find myself consistently setting up the game while I turn to the video and have some of my friends who are maybe a little bit more unfamiliar watch the video to get up to speed. And then I'm not accused of neglecting to share rules halfway through the game, which often happens. So, Triple S Games.
I'm pretty sure you did that with Stratego.
Oh, my goodness. Let's not open that can of worms. But in any event, Triple S Games, look them up on YouTube. Subscribe to their YouTube channel. They put out a variety of content, including how-to-plays and game reviews. And they're a proud sponsor of this show today. But staying on task here, one of the quotes that really jumped out at me and that I've chewed on a lot really over the last year or so is, quote, "The main reason that over 90% of the American public struggles financially is because they play not to lose. They don't play to win," end of quote. Brad, agree, disagree, and why?
I honestly really like this one too. I read it and I was like, whoa, that's totally been me in the years past, and hopefully I'm changing that as I move forward recently. But I totally agree. As I read this book and started like earnestly discussing investing with people, I knew a couple millionaires at Tesla, and so I would just pick their brains on what they did back in the day, what they do now, how they get tips and knowledge on investing and stuff. But I also heard a lot of excuses from people in so-called reasons why people don't want to invest or get into a place where they have some passive income. And they would rather have focus on like having a safe job, which I found out the hard way recently, is not a guarantee at any company anymore. You can't have a safe job. And so they'd rather be safe, or they like one guy told me, he's like, I have a house, I have a family, I get to go home, I know what the routine is going to be like when I get home, I can relax, I know what's going to happen, I'm comfortable with that, I don't want to do anything. He's like, I thought about pulling out some equity, I thought about getting another property and getting some passive income, I thought about investing more. He's like, but I'm comfortable where I'm at, I'm good, maybe in a couple of years I'll do it. And that right there just kind of shows you that it's true. Most American public struggles financially because they play not to lose. They play not to lose rather than to win. I also like his quote: "A job is a short-term solution to a long-term problem. Your long-term problem is you need money. You don't have enough." We'll use that as a long-term American problem. And so, a job is a short-term solution. There's no guarantee you'll have that job next week, tomorrow, when you wake up. It's not going to get you ahead. You're going to be paying tons of taxes. The more you make, the more taxes you'll be paying. You're going to be working for the boss to make him more rich rather than yourself. How many people how many millionaires have you talked to that they got rich just from working the normal 8-to-5 job? If you can find me one, then I'll back off my case.
Well, I'm going to say, one of the things I really enjoy when I'm traveling and I've had enough of educational podcasts is I will listen to Dave Ramsey's Miracle Theme Hour.
That still is a problem. You're still not taking your brain out of your problem solving mode.
That's true. I know. I need to work on that. But there is quite a few people that invested wisely. But I guess they didn't ever get it just from accumulating and sticking in a savings account their millions. You know, they were wise and they invested it. So I guess even then, I would say I don't know anybody who became a millionaire just from their job. Usually their job provided a little bit extra income and they were wise with that extra income. They scrimped and cut down their lifestyle to be able to have more extra income, which they then plowed into investments. And those investments made them millionaires. So yeah, point well taken.
He talks through going kind of with this point in the previous point we were talking about growing your knowledge in four main areas so then you can make informed decisions. And it's not gambling if you know a little about what you're doing. It's gambling when you don't know anything about what you're doing. So he says to push yourself out of the comfort zone, grow your knowledge in accounting, investing, markets, in the law, or taxes. Any thoughts? Like, is there anything you would add to those four? Like, if someone read this book and said, all right, I'm just going to focus on these four areas, would you say there's anything that people should add to those four areas? Or is there one that you focus on more? I know you and I both have a business degree, so accounting, kind of we learn about that through that and then through both business ventures and stuff. But for someone who is maybe, I don't know, not in that whole business area like we are.
Yeah, I think identifying which of the four areas you're the weakest in and then attacking that one with the most vigor is important. You know, for you and I, we, again, having that little bit of business background, we have some familiarity with financial statements and things of that nature. Like a lot of the concepts in this book were somewhat intuitive and I'm familiar with them from wrestling with them in business courses and then in the job that I have now. Some people might not have that background and they might need to lean in to that. You know, there's other areas in the other three that, you know, if you're weak in one of those, probably a great area to start and bring up your literacy level. So we talked about the four areas to work on to grow. Towards the end of the book, Kiyosaki talks about following one course until successful, or FOCUS is the acronym that he gave it. Strikes against diversification. You know, it seems like we're conditioned from birth to not put all your eggs in one basket. What do you think, Brad? Diversification good, bad, indifferent, focus? What's going through your mind?
So I took it a slightly different way. I actually read it as follow one course until, not like through your whole life or your whole career. Follow it for a quarter, 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, until it's successful. So still diversify, still go through mutual funds, stocks, bonds if you want, notes, but also do real estate, also do your own business, selling things. Also, he's more saying follow it. Like if you can, if you say, all right, I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy a duplex for passive income. All right, do that and set yourself a goal for 6 months, a year, whatever. Educate yourself, follow it through until you've bought it. But so while you're doing that, still watch the market for stocks, investment stuff, stuff like that. So you're still on top of things. So you're not just completely pulled out of that area. But don't be like, get halfway through finding a duplex to buy, then all of a sudden dump all the money you were going to dump in there into the stock market because you saw this super potential stock. Like don't do that. Follow, if you have money and you say, I'm going to buy a duplex, follow on through to buy a duplex. After you bought the duplex, then if you want, focus again on, say, all right, I'm going to purchase this much stocks of this company at this price and follow it until that's successful. So that's how I took it.
Yeah. And I see where you're going with that. And I think there's some of that in there. I liked the examples that he used. People like George Soros, Bill Gates, Thomas Edison, Donald Trump, George Patton. They were all very focused and they all had success as a result. You know, I think every third podcast episode, it's a rule that we reference George Patton. We should probably just break down and do an autobiography. But yeah, he focused all his tanks in one small area and he broke through. The French went wide with their defensive line. And what happened? They got steamrolled. And so I think this idea of focusing on an area, figuring out what you're good at, and then running towards that and exploiting your market advantage is crucial when it comes to finances. I really enjoy the Bigger Pockets podcast. It's a very rich podcast with tons of educational content of almost anything imaginable in real estate. And it can be overwhelming to listen to at times because there's so many different guests and so many different perspectives and so many different paths to success in real estate. But the hosts do a good job of explaining to their listeners that don't follow everything that everybody says. Pick an area, figure out what interests you, where your skills line up with, and then go and do that and get really good at that. You know, our next book that we're going to do is The One Thing, which is going to speak to the importance of having one big goal, focusing on that, and aligning your energies behind it to achieve success. So, and again, I don't want to miss what you were saying, Brad. I do think that you don't want to have a completely single-track mind. We as Americans think too highly of our ability to multitask and to learn about tons of things all at once. It's better to be sequential and it's better to focus. Follow one course until successful.
So like, for example, right now, and I know personally I'm not like super successful or anything, but right now I'm focusing on learning everything I can about real estate. But I'm also still keeping my eye on the stock market and reading a couple articles a day about the stock market just so I can keep abreast of what's happening. Because, I don't know, different a company goes down or their stock price drops in one area of the country, and then a whole bunch of people are laid off, the real estate market is going to change in that area. So, I mean, it kind of, in a way, it collaborates, but I can focus all my attention on one thing while still having, like, staying on top of what's going on in this other market.
Another section of the book, and we're getting close to the end here, but Kiyosaki talks about the Chicken Littles of the world. And he uses a couple of really sad examples of people that he had known that had amazing opportunities to invest with honestly not that much money, and passed on it because some ignorant neighbor or coworker told them the sky was falling. You know, don't invest in Phoenix, that market sucks. You know, different things along those lines. How do you overcome cynicism in your life, whether that's from other people telling you, oh, you can't buy a house in California, it's just too expensive, you can't move down to California in the first place, you know, why would you leave Seattle and your family? How have you overcome cynicism in that way, and how do you overcome it or keep it at bay from invading your own mind and becoming a cynic yourself?
So I actually, while we were looking for a house here in California, I had a lot of people at work telling me, why the heck are you trying to buy a house here? Like, it's too expensive. You'll never find one within your price range. You make less than I do. How are you going to afford a house? And also stuff like, oh, the house prices are going to drop soon, so don't buy a house now. Wait. I try and, like, the stuff that's really blatantly just like, oh, the sky is falling, I just try and ignore. And sometimes that even fuels me to prove them wrong. Like, oh, I'm going to prove you wrong. Do it. The stuff that has a little bit more meat to it, I might look into and be like, so if someone tells me, oh, you should sell this stock because I heard that they're just going to plummet, or an article came out and said that they're doing this wrong, so then they're going to go out of business. I might look into that and kind of double check the actual fact. How I try and keep from becoming a cynic myself, kind of along the lines of this podcast is, and what we were talking about earlier, is always trying to become more knowledgeable in things, always trying to learn and keep my mind open, so I'm not the I know everything, or this is the way I think, I'm never going to change how I think. I'm always trying to stay so I can seek to understand before I actually make a decision or seek to be understood. How about you? I mean, I know down there in Colorado, they're all like really negative. So
yeah. I mean, all the free pot floating around tends to make everybody a little bit less positive. But
my point.
Yeah. As far as outside people, really recognizing who is an expert in a field, who has the life experience to actually speak with some validity into a situation, and who has a really uninformed opinion. People are pretty free to share wildly uninformed opinions. Wildly uninformed.
Such as that, for the house thing, when people are like, why are you trying to buy a house here? You make less than I do. And like one guy, he was telling me how he's paying just like $2,300 for a one bedroom, one bath apartment in San Jose. And I'm like, dude, you could buy a house, a nice house, for that amount of monthly payment. Just a little further out.
So first, are you listening to the right people? And then there's also, you know, like, I know some people, I'm pretty good friends with a couple of folks that right after the crash of 2008 liquidated their entire stock portfolio and just put it into cash. Well, they did that in like May of 2009, right after the market had taken its steepest dive since the Great Depression. They left it in cash for 3 years and missed most of the recovery. Not, you know, they were thinking about it from a worst case perspective. And what happens if everything collapses? If everything collapses, it's not going to matter where your money is. If it's electronic and you don't have it under your mattress, it's probably gone. And so, you know, if you really were concerned about that, there's probably better places to put your money. But recognizing that, and then just also focusing on what I can control. I can't control the news. I've started in taking it less. I pay attention to financial news. I don't look as much at political news anymore for a variety of reasons. I value my sanity among one.
Yeah. That's funny. I've actually like hidden my news. My news app used to be like right forefront of my phone, and I'd stay atop on everything, like from New York Times to the small little Gazette song that I get on there. But now it's like I've kind of hidden it second page, and it's just like I want to focus. And this kind of goes along with what we've been talking about: focus on the essential things so you can succeed. Is that essential?
Yeah, I can have more impact on my life by working a plan and by harnessing my mind and achieving goals that I've set out for myself than I can by any number of news articles and worrying about who's the president and whether the government is open or not. None of that has a direct impact on my life. And even if it did, I don't have any control over it to a large degree. So I think focusing on what we can control is really important. Man, this has been an awesome episode, Brad. There is, in the last chapter, there's 10 steps or 10 developmental steps that Kiyosaki puts forth. Number one being having a spiritual reason for why you're pursuing financial success. Really found that list encouraging/challenging. In the interest of time, I don't think we're going to get to that section, which I guess leads us to overall, Brad, would you recommend this book to who and how strongly?
I would recommend it. I know I say this on a lot of books, and I know I say this a lot, but I would recommend it to everyone, but there's some people it's just going to fall on deaf ears. So I'd be very careful who I recommend it to, because there's some people, the Chicken Littles of the world, the sky is falling. Those people, it won't make an impact. But the people who are thinking about it and want to and have been like chewing on it for a while, or are intrigued by how money works or different techniques, I would recommend this to. And I'd really say, hey, read it through several times, go back to it, take points he talked about and study it more. Use this as a platform to dive into the different topics he talks about. So especially if you're financially stable and you're like, I want to get ahead, here's definitely the book for you.
I would completely agree. I think everybody should read this book. I think people should read Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover, then Richest Man in Babylon, and then Rich Dad Poor Dad. I think if you read those three books in that order, man, and you implemented those principles, you would be completely successful, barring calamity of cataclysmic proportional. So, but yes, highly recommend. I think everybody should read this. I think every high schooler should read this. I think it would set you up for a great foundation for moving into the adult world and help your financial literacy. Right now we're in January, but I think I'm going to give this book as a graduation gift. It's that kind of a book. It's an enjoyable read. Again, we talked about this at the beginning, but it's not super intellectual. It's simple. It's understandable. It's relatable. And yet it's deep. It challenges the foundations of financial literacy as we understand them. So with that, moving into our application section, Brad, what was your application here?
Applications to really start focusing my knowledge in continuing my education in the four areas of accounting, investing, markets, and the law, and continue that for the rest of my life, of course, but especially in real estate investing. So yeah, I mean, that's what it is. Stephanie, we've gone over a plan on how on our timeline for knowledge and when we want to be able to. Once I have a job and everything, with the job aside, we've set up a timeline of when we want to be able to say, jump in and be like, all right, let's start investing in real estate. We know enough. We know all the terms. We can talk someone into a corner. Let's do it.
I like it. My application, again, a little bit more general, similar to yours, but I want to focus in 2019 and for the rest of my life on investing for cash flow in assets. You know, we talked about this in our goal setting episode, but hoping to find another apartment complex. In fact, hopefully we can bring some news on that front in a future episode. We're closing in on another one and hoping to put it under contract soon. But in any event, focusing on the asset column, getting cash flowing assets in there, that's a goal of mine, both in the near, the mid, and the long term. that wraps up our review of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. As always, hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please leave us a rating or a like on the various platforms that you downloaded us from. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, podcast.com, several other locations as well. And again, as always, please feel free to reach out with questions, with comments, with feedback. We always enjoy interacting with our listeners through the various methods that we can be reached, including LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, through the podcast platforms. So, Brad, anything else you want to mention before we sign off?
Yeah, I would just highly recommend picking this up. Again, it's on Audible if you want to listen to it while you drive or work out or whatever you are doing. But honestly, not reading this book would be a detrimental and a setback in your financial career.
Awesome. With that, I'm your host, Sam Rust, signing off.
Catch you guys next time.